Hey everybody, welcome to another episode. I am super excited, as I always am, talking to an incredible colleague in our profession, somebody who I have only admired online until last year, and I had the absolute pleasure to jump at the chance of going up to the Botanic Gardens. Of course, what an amazing place to host an event as well for herbalists, and experience the grassroots conference and experience that was Elizabeth Greenwood's program. And I was thrilled. Absolutely everything she was saying up on stage resonated, and I was shocked that so many people knew who she was and what she had been doing for her career, and I was only just starting to get to know her. So as soon as I saw her, I was like, yes, quick, come on my podcast, share all your beautiful Western herbalist perspective, historical wisdom that you've now taken into the clinical realms, and really this hands-on approach to research, education, and bringing us into alignment as Western herbalists. So I'm super excited to talk to you today. Thank you so much for being here, Elizabeth.
Oh, Tammy, thank you so much for having me. And likewise, I've admired your work as well and what you're doing. And so it was great to see you at Grassroots. Thank you so much for coming up and experiencing the day. And yeah, it was very special and it made even more special for you being there as well. So thanks for having me on for a chat today.
Yeah, cool. So I get to ask you all these questions because I genuinely don't know the answers to a lot of these things from your perspective. And I'm really excited to hear about your journey in our profession. It's an incredible honor to hear everybody's happenstance that gets them into our profession. So I would love to hear how it is that you managed to get into Western herbalism.
Okay, a couple of reasons that I got into it. One of them is that it's always been a way of life for me. My father was very out there as far as trying lots of different remedies. So I grew up tasting all these different concoctions that he'd make and in order for our health. And also what I spent a lot of time training in a bit to become an I was an iron they called it Iron Man back then, but Iron Person today. And so I did a lot of training, and my coach was all we did loads of physical training, but my coach was always that it's all in the mind. And like when you're traveling out through the surf and coming up with these 10, 15 foot waves, you've got to have a strong mind in order to get through a lot of that. And so when I started studying naturopathy, the blend of the science, but also the mind and the emotions just spoke to me. And I will never forget my first anatomy and physiology class. And I was like, wow, that's how it works. I understand it now. And that's how my body works. And then there was all the naturopathic philosophy, and I was a bit of a hippie back then. And so it all just gelled together, and I just never looked back. I was like, that's it. The other side of it is that I was living in a small town and I just wanted to do something with education as well. And I saw education as a way to get me out of that town and develop. So that's why I hung on to it so strongly as well.
Yeah,
Yeah.
wow. And so you moved from a small town to a big city?
Yeah, I moved from Coffs Harbour, which a lot of people know, but that was in the 90s, and moved to Brisbane by myself when I was 17 to study natural medicine. And yeah, that was 1993. I went straight from school.
Wow, straight from school. I've only met another, you're a few, a handful of our amazing leaders in our profession that have gone straight from school into the
Right.
profession. And was there any challenges along the way
Yes.
when you made that transition?
Oh, absolutely. Moving to a big city by myself and just a lot of the study, and yeah, you work through a lot as with natural therapies. It's like a massive personal development
It's
course, isn't it?
so applicable to yourself immediately. So I can't imagine what it's like from a 17-year-old perspective, because I came into it, it was my second career. So it's an interesting thing to go, oh, wow, imagine applying that and trying to understand that from such an early kind of conceptual way of applying it to your life.
Yeah. And so a couple of the challenges were, like, I don't know if many people know Brisbane in the 90s, but share housing was it was a thing. They've even made movies about it, right? It was actually absolutely like that. So in a share house of about six people, I was the only one studying. Everybody else was street performers or actors or all these creative people. So that was a challenge, just to stay focused and study for my anatomy and physiology exam when everyone else was practicing fire twirling or something. And so I had this kind of eclectic sort of approach to naturopathy back then. But one of the biggest challenges, which I love to tell people about, was it being accepted, right? Because back then, the naturopathy degree, it's changed so much, understandably. But back then, we did massage as part of nat. And so that wasn't really accepted like it is these days. And also, talking about traditional concepts like the vagus nerve. And the reflex action of the vagus nerve. And I would come home from uni all excited, telling everybody, this is what I learned today about the vagus nerve. And everybody I told would belittle it or laugh at it. And it was just no one understood it. And 30 years later,
It's cutting edge science.
right.
And you were surrounded by musicians using their vagus nerve day in, day out as well.
Exactly. That's right. So I think even though a lot of people think these days we're facing challenges of clinically proven evidence and everything, I use that as an example to just stick with it, hang in there, work with these concepts, and science will catch up.
Yeah, definitely. It was one of my favorite insights when you were up on stage at Grassroots around you looking at some of these more traditional lineages that were associated with you. And I've certainly had it with my family history as I've dived into it. Seven generation Australian, but 7 generations ago, we came across from Europe. And so I'm white. And all my genealogy says that. And when I try to connect with what that history is, and we get taught the materia medica and all of these principles that are very British and very Celtic and very pagan, even, I felt this slight disconnect having been here in Australia. But going over to England, I was like, wow, this is amazing. But it was like an empirical knowledge that I had, and something that you're just describing for me, I would label that as an empirical knowledge of the vagus nerve. And then 30 years later, we go, oh, yes, science says so. And that really rang true to me when you were describing exploring that lineage for yourself in the energetics of herbs. How did that all come about for you?
I am English. I was born over in the UK, came over to Australia when I was about 11. And we're from a long line of Greenwoods, basically. And they're an eclectic bunch, but they're from North England. And then before that, about four generations ago, Romanian gypsies. So there's that real spiritual element and connection to the land that I felt when I was in UK, and which you felt as well, that deep sort of blood connection to your roots over there.
Definitely.
And so being over in Australia, you lost that kind of connection, but always stayed true to that sort of gypsy spirit and that sense of wonder that we have about what else is there. Let's delve into that more spiritual side as well.
And when you started, so for me, when I started noticing these things appearing in Culpeper and appearing in Greaves and appearing in that kind of stuff, I felt more at home in my choice to study Western herbalism and naturopathy. Whereas a lot of people who I went through with, they then went on to study, say, pharmacy, or they went on to study acupuncture or some other kind of lineage there. And one of my favorite things about Holistic Studio is that you continue to teach these Western traditions, and it gives us a sense of roots. What do you know? Grassroots as well. Good choice of languaging.
Fitting.
Can you tell us a bit more about what else you teach and why you've chosen those types of pathways?
Yes, absolutely. I do think that Like you say, a lot of the energetics and the understanding of energetics that we have, we look towards the East for that. And that's great. But my sort of quip or theory is that the East survived the pharmaceutical revolution, whereas our energetics didn't survive that as today. So I got, no, that's not existing, put it aside. But now people are like, hang on, there's got to be more to this. Let's look at it. And so off we go to China or India to look for those understandings. So when I was studying back then, it was before the internet. And it was, so a lot of this Western energetics understanding was embedded within the knowledge and the wisdom of the lecturers and the readings we did and the understanding of the herbs. That was the language that we used a lot. And it was only when we brought the wonderful Matthew Wood out to Australia and took him to the botanical gardens. And a lot of my colleagues were fascinated by the way he spoke about the herbs. And, oh, that's fascinating. I want to learn more about it. And I said, do you know about this? I said, yeah, that's how I see the herbs. And that was when I realized, that was probably 10 years ago, and I realized, hang on, this is something we're at risk of losing here. And I feel it so deeply and passionately that it is my role to keep this knowledge in our forefront because I live and breathe it, right? It makes a lot of sense. It's very important. It pieces things together. It's a color and the glue that holds all the scientific diagnosis together and makes it more individual. So with Holistic Studio, that's why I've developed those courses is Western energetics and then also herbal energetics, where we dive into it a bit deeper. Also iridology and aromatherapy. These are all modalities that were so strong in the degree when I was studying, and I've just always practiced and always used them. And now they're getting taught out of the courses and not, they're at risk, we're at risk of losing them. And they're extremely, not powerful, powerful is not the right word, but they are life-changing. When you've got the right essential oil or the right iridology reading or the right understanding of energetics, it can give you real depth of understanding as to what's going on for the person. So I'm really passionate about keeping this knowledge and skill alongside the science, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point that the quantitative aspects of science have afforded us incredible acceptance and incredible, but the qualitative
Yes.
aspects of the energetics and the qualitative aspects of story and how we understand humans and their mixture with plants and lifestyle is it, we need both qualitative and quantitative.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You mentioned Matthew Wood. Is there anybody else that you have looked up to as a mentor? Because you've been in for what, 30 years as a
Yeah, 30
practitioner.
years. Yeah.
So, is there any other mentors that you have come across over your time where you've been inspired in a
Oh, so
profession?
many, so many, so many people I could shout out to, honestly. And these are the kind of people where we could just talk for hours about energetics and the state of the world and all sorts of things. One of the people that comes to mind who's specific in energetics is my supervisor, Graham Tobin, Dr. Graham Tobin. He's over in the UK. He did his thesis on Culpeper. And when I went over to the UK, we went to a little side note, but we went to the old John Ryland's library in Manchester where they have original Culpeper, original, yep,
Oh, that
45.
gives me goosebumps. Wow.
It's huge, encased in pig skin, and the when you turn the pages, it crackles, you know, when you turn the pages.
Oh,
And we saw the original Culpeper and the original Dean William Turner, the first herbal ever written, and apart from Dioscorides, but the first herbal that we can find today. Anyway, so all these amazing herbal books, and they're all in Latin, And so we looked at those books, and then we found our way through the library and ended up in some random little hallway where they had the original printing press that those books were printed on.
Oh my goodness.
And it was just this big eagle sort of thing with little letters that they had to put in individually for each page, and then
Wow.
that made the paper. And oh, it was just a world away, honestly. It was great.
Oh, that's extraordinary. I think there's something when you talk through that we don't want any of those forgotten healing arts to be forgotten. I think there's something really interesting about being this bridge to the tangible that Culpeper was there and the printers were there around the same time as all of this was finally getting its day and part of history. Whereas prior to that, it was all that verbal history that we can't access, we couldn't access, but it's that turning point that we've had and been able to do it. I find that there is some really interesting mirroring of you creating the courses that allow other people to access this kind of historical information in a way that we can in this modern aspect. Whereas books back then, when the printing press needed each individual letter to line up to transfer that knowledge, I think there's something really cool about that.
There is, isn't it? And there's something really cool as well. Like in the scientific knowledge and understanding that we have today, we know so much about plant chemistry now, whereas back then we didn't so much, right? And so being able to understand the energetic side of it and then the modern side of the plant chemistry, we're in quite a unique position to see how it all makes sense and why it works. And yeah.
Yeah, and the hints and nods to it back then, even though they didn't have the wording or the ke plant chemistry to. Humoral theory is so cool to be able to go back and go hot, cold, this, that, or the other, when you can then apply biochemistry on top of it. It's so cool.
Yeah, so it's really cool and it makes sense. It makes sense when you understand it. It does. It makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, there's quite a few people. No one else really that comes to mind. It's more like a bit here and a bit there and a bit there. But we've got some really great traditional herbalists in Australia that, like, the amount of times I've sat around with Rob Santich talking about energetics and spirituality and sweat lodges and all sorts of things.
It's so
So,
interesting. I think for the new people coming through, having this very scientific fundamentals, pass the test, move into buying their formulations from companies, I think there's something missed in that connection point and that relationship build where we can talk about the person-to-person aspect of why some of these companies existed in the first place, like Rob's influence in some of these companies as they come through and other things. I think there's something really powerful, I think, moving forward with this relationship build and connection human to human now in our profession rather than us and profession versus industry, that kind of stuff that we get taught now seems to be taught in these qualifications that are coming through at the moment.
And there's so much to that as well, isn't there? There's so much to the way modern naturopathy is interpreted and utilized, and it's valid and it's fabulous to see. But I don't want to see that at the loss of the energetics side of it, or even iridology, which is, that's a risk I see. So I think it's very important to understand that they are two very different ways of thinking, and each has their place, but we'll get into that, but
I don't think it's an either or. I think it's an and.
it is. It is.
What else do you, in the present day, in the current climate of, because you've been around for 30 years, in the current climate, what do you think the biggest challenges are for naturopathy at the moment?
Yeah, I'm so glad you led into that because I almost started talking about that actually. But that was the biggest challenge, I would say, would be that we are at risk of using naturopathy in the biomedical model. Some things fit, right? The more clinically proven things they get, that's fine. Some things do fit into that biomedical model, but as any good scientist will tell you, that science works within the bell curve. So most people, most of the time, but it doesn't fit everyone or suit everyone, and so it doesn't have all the answers. And so it does have limits. And that's what a lot of people don't understand, is the limits to research and evidence, and why most of our herbs still haven't been clinically proven. That's why they don't have evidence. Much like the vagus nerve, going back to that example. So I think the biggest challenge is trying to just replace drugs with herbs and reducing the herbs down to one or two phytochemicals. That's a challenge. And also, people's approach is okay, they've got a disease state, say endometriosis, right? These are the endometriosis herbs. Let's prescribe them. Classic one, PCOS, right? Everyone thinks peony licorice, give it to them. Hang on, what about everything else? What about what's going on for them? So, really, even though they're great and they're clinically proven, then people get upset that they might not work. And why aren't they working in this particular person? The evidence say they should, but they're not, and that's where the individual approach comes in. So seeing people as individuals rather than their disease presentation is something that I talk about in my lecturing at university all the time, because people are taught, or it's expected through the scientific research revolution, that we have the disease state and then we're trying to find the remedy to treat that disease state. So I think the challenge in naturopathy is to keep in mind the body, mind, and spirit and emotions, and incorporate all of those, not just see them as an add-on.
Definitely. And we were started on principles. And I think we all get taught these principles in the literally like the first class of the first thing of the first bit. And then we pass a test by remembering those principles by rote. But apart from that, I really think there's these fundamentals that they underpin everything that we do. And if you are treating the whole person and you are treating the actual cause, not problem solution, you're actually treating in a way that brings about these principles. You wouldn't just do drug for symptom. It just doesn't make any sense based on that kind of principles notion, I think.
Absolutely. And I think finding power and strength in that approach, and finding confidence in that approach rather than seeing it as a, it's not as valid as the scientific research. It is essentially even more valid, I would say, and it's even more complex as well. So trying to simplify naturopathy into phytochemicals for disease state is simplifying it into the biomedical model. Whereas to me, naturopathy is a lot more complex than that. And that can be a struggle when people are coming from a more of a protocol based, this disease state, these are the herbs, this is what you do. To delve into that different way of thinking in naturopathy, where it is full of complexity and nuance and, like you say, qualitative, observational understanding, then that can be challenging for a lot of people, because they think that what naturopathy is actually the simple approach, but it's the other way around, as far as I see
So
it.
much more nuanced than that. Definitely. So my favorite principle is doctor as teacher, and I can see it in you in everything that you do. Tell us about your teaching role. Like you said, in Holistic Studio, you're also a lecturer, but you're also a student. You're researching as well. Tell us about that. What does that look like in your world?
Always constant student, always studying. There's always something new to learn. There's always some new research or new things coming out all the time. But when I was studying, I did an aromatherapy certificate and for a year. And within that, I wrote an assignment on medicinal bathing, and I was really passionate about the transdermal absorption of essential oils and how they can be detected in the blood and how they travel through the body. And that was before we had all the understanding that we do today. And that, being English as well, we have a penchant towards bathing, but we like a bath,
Love taking in the
cups of
waters.
tea, a bath, taking the waters. Yes, that's cool. And they, where was I? Sorry.
I love a good bath as well. I'm
Lost
sidetracked too.
in the bath world. So that led me to really want to understand how baths work and why they work, and then looking at the historical evidence and historical research. And I've spoken about it and embodied this research for so long, developed my own products called Embody actually, and just went down this big path on it. And then thought I need to formalize this work because I need to give it back to the profession. And back in the day, medicinal bathing, hydrotherapy was part of the naturopathy course.
Yeah, it wasn't mine as well.
Yes.
And it was one of my favorite topics. I
Okay,
don't know
good.
why I don't get it now because I go and find all of the springs and wells everywhere because I was so enthralled by the topic itself. Sorry, keep
It's
going.
fascinating, isn't it? It's such a fascinating topic. There's so much in it. So that's when I thought I need to formalize everything that I've learned and piece it together. So that's when I enrolled in the doctorate studies in order to formalize what I've learned so far and give it back to the profession. So that's trundling along quite slowly at the moment, to be honest. Yeah, I'm focused a lot more on the energetics approach. And once that's all up and rolling a bit more, then I'll go back to the doctorate studies. But
Yeah. I wonder what that's like to swing between being a lecturer at uni and then being on the other side and being a student and being back in academia as a student versus in academia as the teacher.
I don't see much difference because I learn from my students a
Oh,
lot.
beautiful.
I'm like you say, you've been seeing my work. I'm not famous on the internet, right? It's not my love language, I say.
Yeah.
I'm getting there, but I've always been focused on community and classroom and connecting with people in that way. And so they are very fluent on the latest research and the latest information. And so I learn a lot from my students as well. And so I've been lecturing for about 15, maybe 18 years or something now. And they always come in with something interesting or new. And so I do have this sense of wonder with naturopathy. Like, we don't have all the answers. I certainly don't. And so just to have this sense of wonder of how other people see things and what other people have experienced and trying to understand that. So I'm always learning, always something new to learn. But with the academia side of it, yeah, I think it pieced it together because, like I said, when I studied, it was before the internet. And so I learned from books and everything. So I didn't really understand what clinical evidence was or what clinical trials was. So I went back and did my master's of herbal medicine at Sydney University in order to understand the
The
clinical
process.
research and
Yeah.
what was involved in that. And so then that's why I've gone back to do the PhD is, okay, let's look at how to design a clinical trial and what's involved in that. And it's interesting because I'm actually breaking a little bit of ground as far as designing a new clinical research trial that will be better suited towards natural therapies and holistic methods.
Great, we need
So,
that.
yeah, exactly. So
Yeah.
there's still so much to learn and figure out and give back to the profession.
I think there's something interesting about having longevity in the profession. I remember being my first 5 years and I interviewed my what I called nat struck, the people who I was awestruck by in the profession. I interviewed 10 of them and they had all been in for 15 years plus, and I thought that was such a long time. Now I'm hitting 20 years and I'm like, wow, I'm still trying to figure it out. I don't even know.
Right.
But what I love about our profession is there is constantly something new to be curious about. There is constant iterations. We have so many different ways in accessing the ecosystem that is our profession that we can be students, we can be lecturers, we can be teachers, we can be clinicians, we can be makers and tangible. We can be, it hits on so many kinesthetic, visionary, auditory. We can hit so many notes as a practitioner over the lifetime of our profession that I could never get bored with it.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the best professions that you could possibly pick if you're of a curious nature.
Yeah.
What do you love about being in our profession?
Exactly that. It's so dynamic. It's so dynamic, whether it's something on the news, for example, someone's done something silly, or there's new research come out about something that you're interested in, or a new herb that we haven't had here in Australia very much. There's so much to look at, and like you say, there's so many different areas that you can get into as well. And I think I spent a lot of time working the politics side of naturopathy in the last 10 years, and that is very challenging, as you could imagine, but also so important to have people that have a bigger perspective of the profession and an understanding of where we've come from and the trends and where we want to go in the future and what that looks like. And so the politics side of it is not for everyone, I get that, but
But
it's
it's essential.
very dynamic, very essential as well. And yeah, if you like good discussions, then it's a good place to be.
I
Yeah.
love that. I love that. I think we've all got so many unique gifts and talents as practitioners and as a profession, we have so many unique individuals. And if we can all zone in the season of life that we're in on the particular trait that we have at the time, we can find a role to play that is really rewarding. And it sounds like that was for you.
It
Although it
was
was a challenge, it was really rewarding.
very rewarding, especially through the very political time that we've just been through. And people can change as well. They can a bit of clinical practice and then move on to maybe go and live on a farm. There's so many different areas that you can explore with natural medicine. You don't have to be part of all of it. A lot of
I
people say,
agree.
do you grow your own herbs and make products from your own herbs? And I was like, I'd love to.
Don't have time for that, but yes, I'd love
Traveling, exact
to.
traveling, politics, being out there. It's not fair on the herbs. But there's plenty of people that do that. So working together as a community and working with your individual passions and strengths, rather than feeling like you've got to do it all, working with what inspires you a lot. And similar to you, we support people to find what sparks joy for them and what inspires them about the profession.
What you just mentioned before was that part of your role in the political side of things was to collectively and listen to and collectively create a vision for the future of the profession. And I would love to know what yours is personally, given that you have had decades long experience in the profession, in so many aspects of the profession, and that you have this wonderful inner knowing and roots when it comes to herbal energetics and the education arm of what we do. What do you hold as a vision if we were going to magically, beautifully create a picture for what the future of our profession could look like? What would you love it to look like?
Okay, thank you. I've put a lot of thought into this. And so I'm just going to speak really frankly because I know not everybody's going to agree with me on this. But what I would like to see is that we are a strong standalone profession, that we don't get absorbed into public health. I don't want that to happen for us. I want us to be a registered profession. I've looked at registration, I've looked at all the pros and cons to it, and 100% I think we need it. But I also joined ANTA in order to keep the traditional side of naturopathy as when we get registered. That's a big part of it, right? The iridology, the aromatherapy, all of that needs to be part of the registration, right? So if you're passionate about it and you're then go for politics, get involved. Right, because it's not they doing this and they doing that. It's up to us to make the difference. So what I see is that doctors, the medical profession, are really good at what they do. They're great at medications, short consultations, identifying the concern and the mechanism and the research and the medication, and the medication is stable and you know what dose you're getting every dose, and that is wonderful. That is what they do really well. What we do really well is the extemporaneous dispensing, the developing products specifically for the individual. We do long consultations, we look at diet and lifestyle. And a lot of people say to me, oh, the doctor didn't ask me about diet. And I said, that's not their job. They do what they do and they do that really well. Excuse me. And what we do really well is complementary to that. And I don't think the two merge very well together because one of them is very precision minded and very focused, and what is the cause of this problem? And ours is very open minded. And today, this is causing the problem. Tomorrow, it might be that one. Let's have a look at and work with people's individual lifestyle and their individuality. Whereas the science side of it is the bell curve, most people, most of the time. What we do is treating the individual. I think they're very different ways of thinking. And that was actually proven through a physics example where the closer you get to an object, the less you see it move. So, with the precision minded, the reductionist approach, which is not a negative thing, it's actually a very good thing, is that reductionist approach, which where we get all our plant chemistry understanding from. That the closer you get to that phytochemical molecule, the less you can see how it travels through the body. And so, and it was proven in this physics example where you can't do both at the same time. You cannot have a reductionist see the object really close up approach and also
The
sit
macro.
back and see it move as well. So what we do, especially with the humoral theory things, it's all fluid, it's all movement, it's all how it travels through the body. So I think we need to all stay in our lanes, but work together. Right? Cross refer, and that's what registration would enable, is a cross referral and a deeper understanding of our strengths and our limitations, and likewise the medical profession and their limitations. So there's that side of it. The other side of it is that I just would like people to see this as more of a way of life rather than a personality, right?
I think that is such a great quote. I totally get that. Yes. Yes.
There's people like, oh, you're a naturopath. Oh, and I'm like, no, don't put the minute you put me into a, I'm gonna stay in that box. I'm really not. So yeah, people see it as okay, you're a naturopath, that's who you are. But it's, no, hang on, there's so much more to it, and it's actually a way of life for us. People, I'd like to see more herbal gardens on balconies. So these new builds that are going up, like factor in herbal gardens in there. When you're walking through the streets, there should be herbs lining all the streets for people to use, like
Herbs
that.
and food. Yes. Herbs and
Yes.
food. All the food is
Exactly.
medicine. All of the medicines is food. Yes.
Exactly. It should be reachable for everybody and accessible for everybody rather than it's an elitist or it's protected, which happened around the 15th, 16th century where it became elitist and
And it's kind of
couldn't
crossing
access
over
it.
now with the biohacking and the longevity, blah, blah, bro code kind of rubbish. All of that is naturopathic care. Like it's all naturopathic and historical. I feel like we need credit where credit's due when it comes to the naturopathic principles permeating everyday life.
Yes.
It doesn't need to be a commercialized biohacky bro code version of it. It needs to be us.
Yeah, it does. It does. And to take, like you said, that ego away from it and just be, look, I'm just eating my vegetables. I don't need to think about it. I don't need to research this or put this on the internet. I just need to eat my vegetables.
I love that. I love that. Part of life, not my personality. That's fantastic.
It is. And just making her, if people get start to feel cold and flu, then they've got things that are accessible for them. They know what's available to them, and making it available to every person, not just people that can afford it.
Yeah, I love that. Beautiful. What a beautiful way to end. I'm so appreciative of such a great, in-depth, wild conversation. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being here today, and thank you for everything that you're doing in the past for our profession and into the future. I really appreciate the conversation.
Oh, look, I thank you so much. It's so good. I know we could talk for days, honestly. Thank you so much for having me on here as well. And I really appreciate everything that you're doing as well. So thank you so much.
Awesome. And if you'd like to connect with Elizabeth further, all of her links are around this audio, and we're looking forward to continuing our conversation in the future, hopefully doing some collaborative work. Thanks, guys. Bye.